You're listening to
Wrestling to the Max.
Alert, alert, clear all channels.
This is an exclusive.
How you like that?
Gary Vaughn, Sean Garmer, and Paul Leeser.
King of Sports. New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Hello and welcome to another Wrestling Max Extra. This is number 22, if my count is correct. And we are, it seems like every time we do one of these New Japan things, we're missing somebody. Last time was Paul, this time Gary is not on with us. Don't know if he'll call in at some point later. But he had some stuff to do and he won't be on at least for the beginning. So, but at least this time I have Paul with me, so should be much better evening, at least. How are you doing, Paul?
Not too shabby, missing my Broncos to talk about some New Japan, which I guess is a fair trade.
Fair enough. So, with us again, always honored to have this man here with us, a New Japan long-time watching veteran since 1984, and also a Cowboys fan, which we'll talk about that in a little bit here. Mr. Tom Reese, how are you doing?
Pretty good, bud. Pretty good.
Well, I said we would discuss this here. Do you play fantasy football at all, Tom?
I keep meaning to get on a DraftKings, but I just haven't done it yet. So, I know about it, but I haven't had a chance to actually sit down and do it yet.
That's fine. You know, the good thing about that is that, you know, you can pretty much do it whenever you want, as opposed to, you know, the leagues that Paul and I are in, which you're, you know, you draft at the beginning, and then you kind of just get stuck with whatever, you know, is the hand that's dealt to you, pretty much, you know. So
right.
If your players suck, you're kind of screwed. And if, you know, you get unlucky, like, you know, I'm sure many Ben Roethlisberger fans or even Ben Roethlisberger owners, like I am in one of my leagues, have to deal without him for 6 weeks. That's going to get a smart pretty bad. But, you know, Paul, how have you looked at your how you've been doing in your leagues?
Oh, just awful, Sean. Just awful. I'm 5 points behind in my money league. The 411 and the W2M league, I'm getting just dominated. Just dominated.
That's sorry.
Yeah, it happens. The one with money on the line is the one I'm doing well in. So I guess if I got to be doing well in one of them, that is the one that I want to do well in.
That's, you know, a good thing. At least you know you can win some money, you know,
mm-hmm.
So. I haven't really looked. I meant to look before we started, and I got kind of busy, but I know I'm 2-0 in the WTM League, so I'm doing okay. Even if I did lose this one, I wouldn't be too bad. I know in the other leagues I'm kind of not doing so well, so I am worried about that a bit there. So, but, you know, Tom hit it on the head previously. You know, he said, you know, he was talking about DraftKings. He meant to do it. I mean, we've been being big time promotional things here for DraftKings. We got to do it one more time, Paul. You want to do the honors?
I got you, Sean. Yeah, I got you. Football season has only just begun. We're in week three. It already feels like the playoffs over at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where millionaires are being crowned all season long. One-week fantasy at DraftKings means no season-long commitments, so like me and Sean, who are doing awful in a lot of leagues, we got to stick with that. Here at DraftKings, you don't. You play on demand, you play where you want, when you want, with the players you want every week, and every week there is $1 million up for grabs. So every game is a big game, and every play of every game matters. So, with that being said, hurry over to DraftKings.com right now. Use the promo code Spreaker to play for free for a shot at $1 million in this week's Millionaire Maker event. Enter Spreaker for free entry now, only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
All right, well done there, Paul.
Do what I can.
So, well, at least from Spreaker, that's the last time that we've heard that we're going to be doing this. It was a whole month campaign. Apparently we reached our quota at the end of last week. Not just our quota, the whole site reached the quota, so they were going to just let us do it this week to kind of, I guess, pad the stats and see if they could pay us some more money. At least we made a little bit, so thank you to all of you guys that listened throughout the month to either this show or the Football to Football show, where we've been reviewing and previewing every week of the NFL and college football, and since it started. So, hopefully you guys have been enjoying that. But let's get into some wrestling. Of course, I should, before we start this, remind anyone that's listening to this and maybe doesn't know that we have a regular episode of the podcast that we do every Friday morning. We pretty much usually talk about WWE and TNA and ROH and NXT and all that stuff. We have been previewing the New Japan shows on those episodes as well because, they've been coming up as they come. And there's another New Japan show coming up pretty soon that we'll be also doing an extra for when that hits. But we'll be previewing it on the regular episodes of the show. So, make sure you listen. And if you didn't know we exist, there you are. We are on iTunes and all these other places that you can find podcasts. So, with all that being said, now we can finally get into this. Let's start with the New Japan and Okayama business here first, even though it is a little on the elderly side at this point. Tom, I'm going to go to you here. What are your, looking at this card before even watching, what was your first inclination to these matches? Were you pretty excited? Or was it just kind of one of those, you thought it was going to be kind of one of those mess shows, or how are you feeling?
Which one, the Wednesday show, or?
Yeah, the Wednesday show.
The Wednesday show went, completely different than what I thought. Because I thought for sure heading in that Ibushi would beat Makabe. And I thought no way Kushida was going to lose the junior title, and then both the opposite happened on both of them. So, other than that, I didn't really have any thoughts going into it. I was more excited for the one today than the one Wednesday, to be honest with you. But
yeah, certainly the one today had the much the bigger card. The one with
the stronger lineup
matches on it, right? Paul, did you have any inclinations or anything going in, or?
I won't say I wasn't looking forward to it, but I did have lower expectations, which proved to be blown out of the water, fortunately, because Wednesday proved to be a much better show than I ever thought I would give it credit for, and especially that main event, which we'll get into, but that surprised the crap out of me.
I'm going to pack these two together because it's always nice, I think, to kind of start. The way New Japan starts their shows usually with these young lions who, we've talked about on here, it's really a great foursome of young lions that they really have. I think it's been a long while since they've had a group that's just this polished, know what they're doing. I think, to be honest, I think for sure the two foreigners, they certainly have a pedigree, and they aren't just brought up in the system where they obviously just weren't. I guess you could say it's not one of these where they're just brought up totally green. they knew what they were doing before they came in, and they just kind of got better as it went along. And then you've got Komatsu and Tanaka that have just kind of grown in and just been, I think, awesome. Like, I mean, I think the one in Kobe was just really too... It ended a lot quicker than a lot of these Young Lion matches usually do. They usually kind of go a little bit longer. I thought the tag match, which is a tag match we've seen a lot of times, but they really work well together on the Yokoyama show, was pretty good. What do you think about these Young Lions as a foursome here, Tom?
I agree with you. These guys are freaking awesome. You know, people are starting to like compare this group to like the Moto, Chono, people like that. You know, it's probably too soon for that. But the one thing you can tell when you watch them is like they're all friends. They're all like they get along, and you can tell they just have like so much energy, so much fire, so much passion. And even though today's match was like short, you couldn't put more action into a short match than they did today. It was good.
What do you think, Paul?
I second the idea of the tag match there. It was amazing. And I've also heard the same little rumblings that this class is like sort of on par with the early 80s class of Muto and Chono and guys who would really come to define New Japan in the 90s and the late 80s. It is just, which is incredibly high praise, but you know, I think I enjoyed the 8-man more than the tag match that we got today. Just simply because I felt like it flowed a lot better. It was insane, fast-paced 5 minutes that we got today, which was fun, but I think I preferred the 8-man more.
I agree with you. The 8-man was more exciting. Yeah.
So I think we've heard rumblings that they, at least Komatsu and Tanaka, are going to go out on their excursions pretty soon. I think it's Tanaka might go to CMLL, and then Komatsu might go to ROH or somewhere in America.
What I think it's the other way around.
Oh, it's the other way around? Okay.
Well, I think. I'm not sure. Yeah.
If it was me booking it, I would do it the other way around.
Well, why do you say that, Paul? Like, just...
So I think Komatsu has a much more, like, when he has much more in-ring charisma, I feel like. And I feel like that would translate better in Mexico than maybe in ROH. I think Sho Tanaka is the better wrestler all around, in my opinion. So him in an ROH atmosphere probably would work out a lot better.
What do you think, Tom? Are they making the right choice, or would you switch them around? Or
no, I definitely would put Tanaka in ROH just for the same reasons. I kind of feel bad for Komatsu going to CMLL. I love CMLL, but boy, they're on a downhill slide. I mean, I don't know how well he's going to excel there, to be honest with you. But in ROH, Tanaka will get over big time easily.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've seen that Watanabe, I mean, he gets apparently... For those, he was in the dark match, I think, for the Extravaganza show, and he got an amazing reaction, apparently. So, and they also had a terrific match as well. So, I mean, it seems like if you go there and you do well, they might forget about the fact that you're there for a little while, like they did with Watanabe. But once they actually use you, and you know, we already know Tanaka's really good. So, I agree with you guys. He's going to be something to watch down there. I just feel bad for Komatsu just because, you know, it's really hard to watch CMLL, period. I don't think they even have TV, right? So it's like, you know, just one of those, like, you just kind of catch them where you can, as opposed to now where they had, I think that's the most house shows they've ever shown on New Japan World since they've had it. Like, they had four before this, for these two shows, so... And we get to see them a lot, and then you're going to go somewhere where we don't really get to see you hardly at all. So, going to be such a change for those two.
That's why I think Tanaka is going to get over big, because everybody knows him already, so it's not like he's coming in as an unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't sell Komatsu short in CMLL. Yeah, it may not be on top of its game right now, but it's so he has such an easy time connecting with the audience inside the ring. It's unreal. So I mean, I feel like he'll do really well.
Not to mention, he already does a lot of the, he does, you know, that running Rana and the senton off the top, stuff that can easily translate to, you know, lucha stuff. So, you know, he doesn't have to change a lot of what he already does. And then he can just kind of grow along learning from that style. So, I mean, hey, look, it worked for Naito.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, these second matches on the card with Liger and all that, I mean, they really aren't much to go on. They're your kind of, your stuff with Nagata and Nakanishi and all that, that kind of litters these undercards that don't really mean anything. I mean, I don't know if there's a lot to talk about there, but we can get
the one on, yeah, the one on Wednesday was good, though, with Liger and Dorada against Red Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
That
right.
One was good, yeah.
Absolutely agree. Dorada really shines in this undercard atmosphere, and it's sort of a shame that he's not getting used a little bit better during his year contract with New Japan right now. But, I mean, he certainly goes out there and puts on a show every single time, which I assume is why they kept him around.
Yeah, I mean, I think he said he's going to go back. Don't know if that has to do with how he was used during this run or not, but I mean, I really hope that maybe they're saving something for Wrestle Kingdom, because man, it's such a bummer that they've teased it so much and we still have never gotten at least one big singles match between Kushida and Dorada, and mm-hmm. it's been teased so often in a lot of these tags and everything that we've seen them in. So who knows? Maybe we will. But, you know, we do have one title match that kind of happened early in the card. The NWA title, Steve Anthony defending against Tiger Mask. We did see, you know, Liger and Anthony had a series of matches earlier in the year. And then, I guess, Tiger Mask getting his shot here. Tiger Mask wins. Sort of surprisingly, I guess, since, you know, they just had that whole big deal with Tenzan having it for a while, and then he lost it, Anthony got it, and then he comes and loses it again in Japan. I thought this was actually pretty decent. I thought it was going to be one of those, you know, Tiger Mask has kind of had his moments where he's really good, and then his moments where he's grumpy, and it's kind of meh. And, you know, Steve Anthony, we haven't seen him a lot, but he's pretty good when he shows up in Japan. What'd you think, Tom?
I kind of agree. Tiger Mask is hit and miss. You know, he's either pretty good or he's just there. You know, he never stinks or anything, but I thought the match was pretty good, and I was actually surprised that he won, but get another Tiger Mask Liger match, I guess.
That did seem to be the plan for Tiger Mask after he wins the championship here. I think Steve Anthony's sort of grown on me. In his brief appearances, he did pretty good in the Best of the Super Juniors. He was pretty impressive here. Tiger Mask seemed on point for what he is now. So, I mean, there's nothing really too bad to complain about here. Not to mention, that submission looked pretty sick for the finish.
Oh, yeah. I'm having to go off memory because I rewatched the two main events, but the other two title matches, I'm kind of having to go off watching them on like Thursday afternoon. I'm like, what happened again?
This was that double arm bar sort of looking thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was
really cool. The chicken wing thing, right?
Yeah, like a chicken wing, double arm bar thing. It's really cool looking. If you haven't seen this match, you should go check out at least that. It looks really painful.
And of course, Bruce Starf is always awesome.
Yes, of course.
Can't get enough of that guy. He's just, he's such a character. Watching him on the outside do stuff. He's like, he's beating him up on the outside. He's just, hey, I didn't do anything. I'm clearly just putting in the boots to him and stuff, but I didn't do anything. It's all right. So I think after this, they had my computer decides that it wants to be slow on occasions, and I hate this, but whatever. So is the life of technology, right?
Yeah. Are we talking Okiyama here, or?
Yeah, Okiyama. So they had the, we had two debuts on this. Matt Sydal showing up in New Japan for the, it's his first time, right? Because he's done Dragon Gate a few times. This is the first time in New Japan?
As far as I'm aware.
And then, of course, the former NXT jobber to the stars, Mr. Now he is Juice Robinson, again. Apparently, his idea is that he is going to shine in New Japan and then use that to get back into NXT so he can leapfrog all of the, you know, talent that is kind of just learning and all that stuff, so he doesn't have to go through the process again. I didn't watch a lot of the, you know, stuff, the house show stuff. He got taken off the Okiyama card because they had to put Cody Hall in the main in that tag with AJ because Yujiro's still injured. So he wasn't on the Okiyama show. We only really got to see him on that Kobe show. He did like a punching combination and that big heel kick that he does pretty well on Nagata. So we didn't get a big sample of him, but we did get to see him like do like Young Lion stuff or whatever when he wasn't booked and all that kind of stuff with him. What do you think about both of their debuts? How do you think they did, Tom?
Well, with Juice, I saw every show except for one on New Japan World this month, and it's like the tag matches. He just comes in for like a minute here and there to throw a couple of spots and get out, and then comes in for the finish. So, you know, you really don't know yet. It's like he's got to feel his way around and then get used to them, and they got to get used to him, I think. But I kind of agree with the decision, you know, because he wasn't going anywhere here, so why not take the gamble and, you know, go over there, try to make a name for yourself, and then come back, worth a shot. And with Seidel, you can't go wrong with that guy. He's just tremendous. It was cool to see him team with Tanahashi, and I was like, say right away, they were the big guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely. Seidel is a home run for New Japan, and especially Ring of Honor. Matt Seidel is somebody who is insanely good, insanely polished, and somebody who I really think could be a great boon to a sort of struggling, still junior heavyweight division, although it's sort of riding the ship, I feel. Juice is an interesting story, I think. Whether he actually succeeds in this quest or not, I don't know, but he certainly put himself in a great position to succeed. I don't know, I hope he's willing to play the long game, because this isn't going to be a quick 2-3 year thing. It's probably going to be 5-7 years, and you got to hope that you're still what WWE is looking for at that point. So we just have to wait and see. Hopefully he finds some success over here, though.
He's still on the younger side, so he could definitely make it work. I think it just depends on how committed he is, because if he thinks he's going to walk in there and leapfrog a bunch of New Japan guys to get to, you know, maybe winning a junior title pretty quick or something like that, he's completely wrong on that. Hopefully, Jay White and Finley kind of gave him the business on how this is going to work. Because of that, keeping him in the dark, I kind of feel bad for him if he's sitting there thinking he's going to go a bunch of places pretty quick. I think, you know, it was interesting with Seidel, too. We got a huge, like a really big interaction there between him and Omega in the tag match that happened this morning. We pretty much almost got like a full preview of their match that's going to take place at the King of Pro Wrestling show. I mean, if you're not excited about what you got from that, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. But are you kind of the mind that they need to tease a little bit? How do you feel about some of the stuff? Sometimes you tag matches, they do a little bit of a tease, and you get nothing. And then sometimes they go overboard, and you get a whole lot. Like you see it with Okada and AJ. Like the first one, where it was just the, you know, single tag, you didn't get a whole lot between them, but you got a little bit of enough. And then you got a lot more when it was the six-man on today's show. Like, how do you feel about when they do these interactions on these tags? Do you want them to give away a little bit, or do you want them to kind of hold back? What do you think, Tom?
I thought, today was a bigger show, so to speak, so, you know, the two main guys, they gotta do a little bit more. I thought on Wednesday, they just actually were doing, like, trying out new spots with each other, maybe, you know, to work into their match on the 12th. But I see where you're coming from, not to give too much away. But then again, you know, title and Omega, you know, they're just going to be the junior title match. They can kind of do a lot of the high spots and do a lot of the stuff to get you excited for, like, you know, so once they get in there one-on-one with Styles and Okada, we've seen it four or five times, and it's always great, so you know what you're getting, so why not just let the other guys in the match take over, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's that, and there's also not a ton of build time towards Kings of Pro Wrestling. I think they only got, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks, if that, to build to that, so I personally didn't mind the over-interaction here. So, you know, sometimes if they have some time to build, I prefer they kind of go at it light. But, you know, Seidel and Omega, I mean, if you're not already hyped just hearing their names, then you got problems.
Well, plus the fact Seidel is still new to the New Japan fan, so you kind of, like, have to give them a reason.
Right, yeah. I mean, they did want to show a lot so that you kind of get into them. And I mean, the crowd responded to him pretty well. I mean, I don't know how you don't. I mean, he was just pulling every big move he could just to get the rise out of the crowd, and it seemed to work. So, good for him. It's good for the junior division, as Paul was saying. Like, they really need, even if he doesn't stay around a little while, they really just need new, fresh faces and people that are going to get people excited about that division, because it's kind of been the same few, and they've been, you know, trading. I mean, they done a good job with Omega building him up and everything, but it's kind of been the same guys, or you just don't have him defended for a while and stuff like that, too.
And most of them are, like, primarily tag guys, you know, and they don't have enough, like, primary single guys.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, speaking of the tags, you gave me a great segue there, Tom, of the tag team, the IWGP tag titles, certainly titles that are, you know, are being held by two distinct gentlemen, you know, Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson. Yeah, guys that are, it's either you get the, everybody thinks Carl Anderson is great and Doc Gallows is terrible, or, you know, it's funny how as a tag team they kind of work, but when they're in singles it's totally different, two different guys there. And then you get the just veteran tag team that has been around for what seems like forever in Tenkozy. And, you know, we know Tenzan is on the older side now, or, you know, at least just, you know, his body is kind of just wearing down on him. But, man, this was a really good match. I did not expect this to be so good. And it just, they did a lot of false finishes here, just... There was times where you really thought, oh, man, they're going to do the title switch and everything? Because, I mean, it's not like they just have this huge list of tag team competitors for Gallus and Anderson to go against. And especially what, you know, we saw with Anderson later, you know, it wouldn't have been that far-fetched to see, you know, Tenkozy win the titles back again. What did you think of the match here, Tom?
The tag title match looked, I think, like the biggest shock of the week at how good it was. I was surprised. I was just expecting. I'm like one of those guys, I just can't stand Gallows. I don't know. I just rubbed me. He might be the coolest guy in the world, for all I know, but he just, I don't know, the face paint and everything just rubbed me the wrong way. And then, like you said, Tenzan,
like,
and, you know.
That cheap face paint you can get at, like, the dollar store.
Yeah. I don't know. It just, in that setting, it just, I don't know, it just doesn't do it for me. But the match was great, though. I liked it a whole lot.
Yeah,
Tenzan on and on. It can actually be exciting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even Doc was on here, and Doc has some pretty off days sometimes. But he really does shine here. As he's a really good tag wrestler, I feel. So him and Anderson work well together.
Yeah, he's way better of a tag, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Watching him in the G1 is painful. But here he really shines. I think, and Kojima and Anderson bring it too, and they're the better halves of these teams. And they put on a really hard hitting affair that draws you in.
I love the way Anderson just, like, sells everything like Kojima does. Like, he's, like, getting just destroyed or whatever. Like, every time he does the, you know, Kojima does the machine gun chops, like, Anderson freaking takes it to another level. He, like, goes over the top rope and, like, lays on the top turnbuckle and stuff. Like, it's just like, you don't have to do that, but he just goes out of his way to make it look more awesome, you know. And it's something that Kojima does in every match, but you appreciate it because Anderson does it that way. And just, you know, him having the gun stun, just there's so many things you can do with that, that it's always interesting the way he can make that into a freaking reversal fest that even though you know he's going to hit it eventually, it's still something cool that you don't know.
Oh, it's so bit creative. Yeah, you can get really creative with that move.
Kojima does it too, so it's really neat getting to see who's going to hit it first and all that kind of stuff, you know. So, I still wish Gallus would stop doing the whole wearing the title like it's his dick or something. That's just that's terrible.
That's what I mean how he annoyed me. Just try with between the face paint and then, like, you know, I think he's Kevin Nash from the 90s or something, you know. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. And always giving shout-outs to weird, you know, like, I'm pretty sure CM Punk doesn't care at all about what you have to say about him in one of these G1 matches that he felt like he had to say that before the match. I'm like, okay, whatever there, Gallows. I mean, I did mention before that, you know, they had this build-up here with AJ and Okada, you know, with the variety of the tag matches that they had. You know, you had Yano and Cody Hall being both of them, and then you had on today's, you had Sakuraba and Tama Tonga. Obviously, you know, AJ and Okada are just like two peas in a pod. They just, when you get those two together, you know you're getting something awesome. But it's just amazing to me how every time they do this, I think they have to have like one of the best reversal finisher things in wrestling, period. I mean, it doesn't matter how many times they do it, they find different ways to make it creative and really get you into it. Even if it's about like a 2-minute thing. Just the fact that they know each other so well, they just know how to hit that. What did you think
about their
interactions here in the two matches?
Even when they do like the simple like run the rope, drop down, jump over the guy, they do it so quick, so smooth. I mean, you think they're gonna crash or something, but they're just so smooth together. And today's match, I don't know what it was, but I was like looking forward to Cody Hall and there was Sakuraba. That just had the makings of something. I don't know what, but
I mean, even Sakuraba AJ would be really cool to see at some point. Don't know if they'd ever do that, but
remember they had a little interaction on that one G1 show, you know, when they did a 6-man. It was actually pretty good. Like, just Sakuraba got some cool submissions on him or something in Sumo Hall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
The thing I think I like, I can't remember if it was the Wednesday or the Saturday show, seeing as I watched both of them today, but Okada and Styles, they had a nice little throwback to their finish back at Dominion in one of these matches, which I really, really dug, because they kept going with it and added on more, and it was just this really neat little sequence. And I think Cody Hall deserves some mention here. He's coming along very quickly, and he really held his own in the tag match and in the multi-man on this morning.
Oh, I'd agree. Yeah, that's one thing that from, I think all that work in the G1 really helped him. I mean, he was on every show doing something with either Tama Tonga or Yujiro or somebody, and just getting all of that work at once, I think really kind of got him along, working with different guys every night that they had the shows. So, I mean, it's good to see him really getting things along, because, you know, at first you were sitting there like, oh man, they're having to protect him because he's coming to do his like two moves and that's it, and he's certainly evolved much more than that. You know, he's certainly not the member of the team that brings him down. I mean, now you can really say that whole, other than Yujiro, I mean, I guess Yujiro would now be the worst person in the Bullet Club, I guess.
Ouch.
Yeah, the other thing about Hall I like is, you know, in the beginning you're doing too much of the Razor Ramon mannerisms. Mm. Whereas now he looks like he's just finding his own persona, so to speak.
That's definitely. I mean, take all you want from your dad or whatever. It's you can do. You know, if you want to do the Razor's Edge, whatever, do it. Just please don't try to kill anyone. You know, It's that image of him like almost dropping Nagata on his head just will not get out of my purview ever again, I think, until he just hits it and doesn't do that ever. But I mean, out of that, I mean, one mistake. I mean, he does really. I love the fact that he does that. He's good at like doing that whole lift up and then rib breaker thing, and that discus clothesline he does is still pretty vicious. So.
It is nasty.
I mean, it's got to be him and Luke Harper got to have the two really awesome ones still.
Yeah.
But I mean, moving to another to the two title matches on the Okayama show, Kushida and Omega. I mean, these two have great chemistry with each other. They work well because, you know, they're just the two, like, personality traits that work so well against each other. You got the just total dick heel that dances and you know, moves a broom to his music because he cleans things up. And then, you know, you've got Kushida's just your straight-laced babyface, you know, and with that crowd that's going to totally connect with him all the time. We did get a lot of Bullet Club stuff in here with Gallows and then Anderson coming in with the Randy Orton gunson out of nowhere moment. Was this a little bit too much Bullet Club here? And I thought
way
the finish was kind of like also out of nowhere. I thought that you'd get the kick out from Kushida there. It kind of felt like, okay, that's it? Really? Not to mention the shock of Omega winning again when Kushida has only had one title defense in his two title wins that he's had. But what do you think about the match and then, you know, the booking, which was obviously pretty weird?
I agree with your Bullet Club. There are just too much Bullet Club in this match for my taste. I mean, you know, you get that. Like, usually when they interfere, it doesn't lead directly to the finish. They do their thing and they get out and then, you know, the guys do their thing. But this time, it kind of like almost set up the finish. And I don't know, I wouldn't have taken the belt off of Kushida yet because I just think he had too much momentum. And not only that, he lost the non-title match to Sydal here in Philly, and I thought that's what they were actually going to be building toward, Kushida and Sydal, but, you know, I don't know. This is one I didn't agree with.
I think it's a fair move. It may not be one that we all agree with, but it's a fair move. I think these are the two guys they're trying to build a division around, obviously. And Omega being the super heel, Kushida constantly being the babyface on the run trying to get that belt back is the way they're going to go for now. And you know, too much Bullet Club or not, I think it worked. The sympathy is totally with Kushida now if they want to keep chasing this. And it may, you know, like I said, it may not have gone the way we wanted it to, but I think it's a smart piece of business here, honestly.
And Sydal was there during the whole match, kind of in Kushida's corner. As Shelly was also there, he kind of got involved and actually made Omega stunt on Gallows on the outside, which was pretty cool. These guys just they work so well together. I mean, and Omega's so good. I think people just there's a lot of people that for some reason just hate Omega, and sometimes like the cleaner gimmick, you know, kind of gets in the way a little bit. I think he's toned it down so much from, I think, when we saw him, when we first started covering on the podcast, like, you know, around Wrestle Kingdom and all that, where it was just ridiculous. Like, thank God he doesn't do that stupid buzzsaw thing anymore. That thing just bothered the crap out of me. But he's just so good, and I'm okay with it because he's so great as a, like, just this heel that's like, I don't care, I want to beat everyone, and you guys are all trash, and whatever. And he does it to Sydal, too, there at the end with that promo, which apparently a lot of people hate his promos. I mean, I where do you guys stand on that? Because I saw a lot of people, you know, we're, you know, all part of that, you know, Japanese group. I saw a lot of people just can't stand the way he does promos, apparently. I just think it's just, he's just really into that gimmick, and everything he does is part of that gimmick, so...
Oh, I don't mind the gimmick. I think he's pretty good at it. Like you say, I was just shocked at the title change. That's all. You know, but as far as Omega goes, oh, the guy's super talented.
I mean, there's been a lot of rumblings about that apparently, I don't know if it's just speculation or just from him, that maybe he wants to go heavyweight. Like, Paul, what do you, I guess, sorry I cut you off on the first point, but like, do you see that for Omega eventually? Do you think that maybe they put the title back on him so that he kind of feels like it's okay for him to be in the spot right now, or?
I just think they put the title back on him to create the two-man division that they have going while they try to build up the rest. Honestly, him going heavyweight, I don't know. Like, I mean, he's got the build. I don't see it. I think he's a much better junior heavyweight wrestler, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, him and Kushida could really turn that division into something wonderful. When it comes to his promos, I just think he sees the cleaner as this crazy over-the-top guy because he's almost maniacal on the microphone, especially in this one where there's like the over-exaggerated laugh and I mean I hit the man, this is awkward part wherever that he was waiting for the belt was really hilarious, but
And his music too. He's like,
yeah.
hit my music. Wait, where's my title? What? Oh, this is awkward.
Rude.
So, I mean, I think Seidel's great for him too, because it's kind of like Kushida. He doesn't talk a lot. You know, he's all about all business. You know, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And we already know, you know, apparently they're gonna work great together. So, I mean, let's move, you know, to the main event, which. Again, a lot of people, I mean myself included, I think we all picked it on the podcast too, of seemed like Ibushi was slam dunk gonna win the NEVER title and you move it into a different direction. Makabe wins, the match was great, no problems there. I mean, we know Ibushi makes he just can work well with anyone, and you know, Makabe is pretty good when he's in there with the right person, but now it seems like instead of just move, even with Makabe winning, we're going back to the old hat of Ishii Makabe like five. I think this is during this year at Kings, you know, King of Pro Wrestling. I mean, what do you think about the match? And did you think that Ibushi should have won here? Do you think it's that whole thing with DDT still kind of holding him back? And where are you at with this Ishii and Makabe thing? Because I'm kind of at the point where it's just like we're doing this a little bit too much. I mean, I think with Nak and Goto, they keep adding on layers to their matches. I think they got it all together in that match this morning. Whereas with Makabe and Ishii, like it's almost the same thing every time. It just depends on how long they make the match, and it's like, why do we keep doing this over and over? I mean, do you have an answer to that, Tom?
That's why I thought Ibushi would win because they're creating a whole bunch of new matchups. You know, Ibushi Makabe, Ibushi Ishii, Ibushi Hamna, you know, all those guys that are battling for the NEVER title. But like you said, just going back to the same hat, where, well, there's nothing wrong with Ishii and Makabe, it's just how hard they can hit each other. With Ibushi, they get like you said, with Nakamura and Goto, you get more layers, you know what I mean? It's like, he can bring a different style of a match, you know. He can do the strong man stuff. He can do the high flying. Just more option with Ibushi, I think, and more fresh matchups.
I completely agree. I'm not going to question the decision because I think the finish to the Intercontinental title match this morning might point us towards a rematch for Wrestle Kingdom that could be used as a star-making performance again for Ibushi. But I think this was a nice like little storytelling match here because Makabe beat the crap out of Ibushi and he didn't take none of it and gave it right back. And that's a side of Ibushi I don't think we've really seen a whole ton of, other than you know a smiley flippy guy. So this was a nice little change of pace for Ibushi. The NEVER Openweight title might as well just be renamed the Tough Guy title because it's going to be Hanma, Ishii, and Makabe in that combination for a while now.
But what does that say? Like, didn't Ishii lost to Hanma in the G1? Like, why is Ishii again getting a rematch when, you
I
know,
don't know.
Makabe keeps beating him?
If I'm not mistaken, I think Makabe won the last two or three matches against Ishii, so that means Ishii's due for a win. Theoretically.
I mean, Ishii is great. I'm not gonna hate on that, whatever. If the idea is Ishii wins and then maybe you have an Ishii and so, I mean, this is what's weird to me because, like, there's so many things you can do here. I mean, considering from the G1, I mean, you could do my idea too with what happened on this morning with the IC title match is technically, even though it wasn't an actual match, technically Michael Elgin beat Nakamura. Could you, like, they could do the whole, oh, it's the match you didn't get to see between Elgin and Nakamura for the IC title or something, now that Goto doesn't have it. You could do...
And it's kind of like holding match, so, yeah.
Right, you could they do Elgin like Ishii again, match, too, you know? For the NEVER title if Ishii wins. So, I mean, because you know he's going to be there after all the stuff that happened at G1. It's just, what match would they do with him? I know there's obviously a great storytelling thing there with Ibushi and Nakamura, so maybe you go that route, but what do you think, Paul? Like, do you have a preference of a match you'd want to see there?
Not really, because I think we both, I mean, I certainly win in Ibushi and Nakamura, and especially with Elgin and Nakamura, but I think you go with Ibushi. I think that New Japan is high on him, and whether they can get him away from DDT or whether they can get something, you know, a little bit, just a budge or something, so they can give a title to Ibushi and use him to push to the moon so they can have another star to play with. I'd rather them try to focus on that route than maybe having, you know, Elgin in that role, because, you know, Elgin's going to be going back and forth very often.
What about, there's also been, you know, people speculating about maybe this means if Nakamura holds a title all the way to Wrestle Kingdom, that we finally get that AJ Nakamura dream match for the IC title instead.
I'm fine with that too. And Nakamura and anybody, Nakamura in a wet paper bag, I will pay money for.
No, I think you're getting Nakamura and AJ at the Dome. That's what I think.
I don't
the only thing that hasn't been done yet.
Right, and the thing is too, it's like, you know, AJ is doing great. I mean, and when we know not, and Nakamura is, you know, he has his moments where sometimes he doesn't go full bore every time, depending on, you know, who he's matched up with or whatever. You know, we saw that in some of the early Goto matches, and he kind of turned him on with the later two. I mean, AJ, it's not a guarantee that AJ is going to be around till the 42 mark that he set for himself. So, to me, it's better to always do it when you know he's available and when you know he's there and he's on fire right now, instead of saying, okay, we're going to wait another year to do this, or we're going to wait to do this at another time, and then you don't know what happens at that point. So, I mean, to me, do it when you can. But I guess I can understand the whole wanting to build it up more, too, if you want to go that route. So, you know, the big match, I think, that a lot of people, you know, we saw it in the G1 a lot. For, you know, between Shibata and Naito. I mean, they built it up throughout the entire G1 because they were in the same block and all that stuff. And then, so, we got this, and it was sort of underwhelming. It felt more like the beginning of something instead of the end or even the middle. Because it seemed like it kind of ended rather quickly. I mean, what we got was pretty good. I'm not going to say no, because they beat the crap out of each other, like you would expect them to do. And then you had some cool counters. And then, of course, Naito being freaking dick with the getting the referee in the way and then freaking kicking Shibata in the dick twice. Poor guy. And then, of course, the cameraman get beat up afterwards, too. But I mean, what do you guys think of this? And does it seem like this is pretty much headed to Tokyo Dome rematch? Or,
well, if it's the beginning, I'm all for it. That means we get more. But I didn't think it was that back and forth. I thought Shibata got like most of the match, and I'm watching. I'm like, Naito won this match because, man, he's just taking everything Shibata's throwing at him. You know, and it's like,
right.
And Shibata was just kicking the hell out of him. And then, you know, at the end there, Naito did his Toriano impersonation with the ref and the little blow. But no, I thought it was a good match. I really liked it. Just, like I said, it just beat the hell out of each other.
I really enjoyed this match a lot, too. I think Naito is a guy who deserves something better than mid-card flight stuff. especially with this gimmick. It's so it's revitalized him so much that it's just he's must watch TV now. And this match with Shibata really felt like a grudge match, which I dug the whole way through. And if it's a beginning for something that hopefully ends at King of Wrestling, that's fine with me, because I really think it would be interesting to have Naito somehow upset Tanahashi and take that briefcase.
Yeah, I mean, that
the only
was
thing I thought
pretty cool. Go ahead.
Hey, go ahead, bud.
No, I was done. Go ahead with
your the only thing I thought it was going to be different. Yeah, I thought today, like, being at, I'm thinking at the beginning, I thought today they would just do like an all-out brawl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like taking everything out with them, go all over the building or something like that. Because, like you said, it is heated. It's like a grudge match.
I mean, they
and
pretty much
so
almost
kind of
did
like,
that. I mean, they even battled. We never see that anybody battle to the back like that. So, I mean, that was kind of cool. We also never see somebody take out the cameraman either. So, it's just, I mean, it was, I think we got a little bit of both, you know. But Shibata got to get his, all his frustration. I mean, at the end of the Okuyama show, it felt like Shibata was just never going to stop beating the crap out of Naito. It felt like that thing went on for like 20 minutes of Shibata just coming back and, oh, that's not enough? Okay, well, then I'm just going to beat you down. And then Naito just is like, oh. Who cares? I am Naito. Tranquilo, man. You know, just... but
that
I
match
mean,
all went.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, that match all went to the opening eight man. Like in the beginning of the match, where Shibata was in the ring and Naito was on the ring apron. There's that one point where Naito just like slaps him in the back of the head, and Shibata doesn't even turn around. He just like has a look. You know what? I'm gonna kick your ass in 4 days, dude. Just leave me alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he even gave him two basement draw kicks, so you know he was pissed about that one. I mean, it's just, I love how also they've, like, they built up the sleeper so well, too. I mean, just when he locks that thing in, like, you know, the crowd gets into it, like, oh, crap, it's over. Like, he's going to do the penalty kick now, and then, you know, Naito is able to get out of it both times, so... You know, they've just done I thought they did a really good job of, like, again, building Shibata up. Just, like, do you think that eventually they'll do something with him? He's kind of like in that Ibushi mold where I think he's paying for not being fully committed. Do you see that, or? Tom?
Yeah, I do see that, because, like, not because they're not fully committed, it just... I don't know, maybe in their mind there are more people that are more deserving because they were there, you know, for the dark period, and where he turned around and left.
Yeah, I completely see that too. And, you know, the part where, you know, he left for a while and all that, I think they're just trying to continue to reach out. I mean, they're high on the guy, obviously. We hear a lot of stuff about how much they want to push him. They might be good. And, you know, you have your top guys working so well right now, too. They probably, like, they're doing great business. Why change the mold right now when it's working so well?
Right.
Hey, eventually, you know what? Put him in a never title picture.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great. I mean, he did have a pretty good match with Makabe during the G1. So, I mean, anybody in that group that they're going to consider part of the NEVER title, and of course, hell, him and Ibushi again would be fantastic.
Yeah.
You know. So, you know, moving throughout the card again here, the junior tag titles, which have been, you know, tossed around, I think even worse than a hot potato at this point, have found the, you know, Red Dragon, and I mean, they've been protected like gangbusters by Ghetto and the booking team. I mean, they've only, I think, lost twice, or at least been pinned twice since they, you know, debuted. And a lot of people thought, okay, well, Kushida lost, so that means they're winning the tag titles on the show. And they actually don't. So Kushida loses twice in 4 or 5 days. And Red Dragon retains, so at least we get the junior tag titles staying on one team. Immediately, Roppongi Vice comes out and basically challenges. So you get Roppongi Vice and Red Dragon at King of Pro Wrestling. Did you guys, I mean, I know, you know, we're all for stability here, but how do you think this, like, does this hurt Kushida at all that in two matches, pretty much two title opportunities, he loses?
Not only that, he's not getting the immediate rematch either for the junior title, so it's like, it's almost like he's being cast aside. I don't know.
I don't know if I'd say cast aside. I would say waiting for the right
time. Yeah, too strong, but yeah, maybe that's a better way of looking at it. Well, I did not think that Time Splitters would get the belt because I don't know how committed they're going to be to Shelley right now because he just gets hurt. Seems like every other tour you get hurt now, you know.
Not to mention he keeps being really cryptic about the whole, I'm going to retire. My family tells me I should stop doing this, all this stuff, you know, just if you're saying stuff like that, I also can't put a lot of trust in you because I don't know if, you know, one day you're going to wake up and go, oh man, I can't do this anymore.
Mm.
You know, I mean, the match was really good though.
So. Yeah.
Kyle O'Reilly is awesome. That guy. Like, O'Reilly worked just about, seemed like he worked most of the match, or at least most of the second half of the match, you know, and he's just awesome.
I agree. He's really finding his way as a singles competitor. I think before this year, I still would have really said I prefer his tag work, but I'm starting to warm up to a lot of his singles stuff. Red Dragon is 29-1 in straight 2-on-2 tag matches, by the way, in New Japan, which is insane.
That is insane. Wow. Yeah.
they have a great match here with the Time Splitters. It's the back and forth is amazing. The spots are amazing. The great thing about all this is that every single team in the junior heavyweight tag team division has wrestled each other only like 10 bajillion times. So everything they do is super smooth and it makes for some wonderful watching.
Yeah, and this felt like a wrestling match. It wasn't the, you know, Young Bucks, like, just go spot, spot, spot thing. They had a lot of different things here. They had a nice story going, too. And, you know, to y'all's point about O'Reilly, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if O'Reilly is ROH World Champion at some point. Because I think they're definitely wanting to build him into, like, one of their big future singles guys. I mean, obviously, Fish is on the older side, so, I mean, that's probably why, but we saw it in the Best of Super Juniors, too. You know, New Japan thinks a lot of him, and to have him go all the way to the final there against Kushida. So, I mean, you know, we could see maybe O'Reilly be junior champion here pretty, you know, at some point, too. So, lots of things headed in O'Reilly's future, definitely, positively. Another thing that was overwhelmingly positive, I mean, we saw Tanahashi have a good match here with Fale at the G1, but I think that's certainly exceeded it, and probably, I mean, might be one of the much better matches on the show if you're looking at it from a just pure match perspective. I mean, aside from the little bots there, what seems like Tanahashi was trying to do the sling blade while he's holding, or while Fale was holding him up for the bad luck fall, but he kind of couldn't get it. But I mean, the thing with the grenade almost at the end, I was like, oh crap, are they gonna pull this, like, are they gonna have him? I mean, they got the crowd there pretty well.
That was a hell of a near fall right there. I had you thinking right there, that grenade. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. He kicked out like 2 and 15/16, it seemed like.
Yeah, Tanahashi and Okada are just so good at, like, knowing immediate, like, when to kick out to, like, just hit that 2.9 whatever moment. Like, they're just so good at that. I mean, I think, you know, Tanahashi did really great here with Fale. I mean, just, you can say what you want about Fale. There's moments where he just is terrible, but he's in there with the right guy. I mean, I think he just, he excels. I mean, even as he keeps getting bigger, I mean, somehow they did really well in telling the story of Tanahashi. Just, okay, I'm gonna lift him, and he finally does it, and it leads, you know, to the finish. So I really enjoyed this. What do you think, Paul?
I'm the same way. Fale is one of those guys who I think might end up being like a Cena. He's a fine worker alone. But when he's the second best guy in the ring, that's when he really shines. Because I think he knows how to work a match. I think he knows how to work the style that New Japan wants him to, which is the big monster that can fill in and take up a big babyface's time and still feel competitive with him while somebody else is doing something else with the guy the big babyface is feuding in. So I don't know. He really works well. It's not like he's working with Chop Liver here, Tanahashi, Okada, these other guys who are just amazing workers. But he's finding his niche quick, fast, and in a hurry, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Tanahashi's just in fuego right now.
Yes.
He cannot have a bad match. So, I don't know that he ever has, but I mean.
And the thing is, before the match starts, you know what the outcome is. You know there's no way Tanahashi wins this match, so that makes it even harder to get the crowd, into it. But Tanahashi is just so good.
Yeah.
So good.
I mean, and they're doing the one with Naito really quick here at King of Pro Wrestling. I thought they might hold it off till Power Struggle because he didn't lose to anybody else after Naito. So, do you see maybe something special for? I mean, we did have Tanahashi talk about maybe giving Nakamura another shot.
I don't know if you noticed this on the Wednesday show, but when Naito was coming to the ring for that 8-man, he kind of got in Gato's face when he was doing the commentary there at ringside. But I said to myself, are they setting up Naito and Okada here? Maybe a little tease? Because, he's getting in Gato's face. And I'm wondering, Naito gets the first big win, first big show win today, with this new gimmick. Is he going to lose right away to Tanahashi? Or do they pull the trigger on something like Naito and Okada?
That was a big question. And if it's me, I think it would be a really fun surprise to pull the trigger on Naito now and see what you get. Because you can have Tanahashi do something else that's still going to pull people in. Okada is going to pull people in. Nakamura with the IC title is going to pull people in. You're going to find ways to fill up that dome. Why not let – I think Naito's on a heck of a roll. I think the crowd is more into him than they ever have been, no matter where they're going. I think you take a shot.
There's going to be a ton of people that are going to be really upset that you don't get the finality of Okada and Tanahashi, though.
But you see, there's the problem right there. You know what the end result's going to be with Tanahashi and Okada, but – if you pull a shocker and put Naito in there, it's like,
Right.
You get people thinking, like you said.
Especially if, we know La Sombra is going to show up for the tag league.
Mm-hmm.
So, you might have Los Ingobernables around, which adds more, issues for Okada to deal with. Don't know if you're going to make it a whole chaos thing and you make it a chaos against Ingobernables deal since, Naito keeps mentioning that he is, he doesn't want to be put into any one of those factions. He's just an Ingobernable or whatever. So, it'd be interesting. I think there's a lot you could do with it. That's the thing, too. There's a lot to be said for you want finality to the story. But like you said, Tom, you know what the end result is, or at least you think you know what the end result is. They could pull another
right,
sword.
Right.
Talk about just destroying Okada at that point too. Couldn't you also do it as the start of the new year too? The feud for the start of the new year, like in a new beginning.
I wouldn't want to skip on an opportunity to give them that stage.
Yeah, especially with, the way the crowd was just totally against Naito 2 years ago when he was going against Okada in the Dome. And, that's when they voted for the Nakamura IC title match to be the main event instead because they just were totally sour on Naito too.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have that much better character dynamic where it's somebody that the crowd doesn't particularly care for at all and then somebody the crowd does care for in Okada, your super champion, your star of the future kind of thing against this guy that's just uber heel right now, it's an interesting dynamic that you have there too, you know. So, I mean, it is good that they have options, you know, instead of just, okay, well, we know the main event, we're just kind of getting, you know, we're just going through the motion until we get there. So what percentage are we putting on the whole pulling the shocker?
Makes that match all the more interesting now, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, with Tanahashi and Naito. But I just thought it was interesting on Wednesday when Naito got in Gato's face. I'm saying to myself, you know, because Gato likes to play those little, you know, put things in place, you know, to work on down the line, so.
Yeah, I mean.
Gato with the old man beard now.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say it's straight 50-50. I don't think there's a wrong answer. I think there's a safe answer and a risky one, but none of them are wrong.
That's a win-win.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I mean, speaking of something that may not, I mean, let's get to the end of it here. Certainly not a win-win for everybody. Probably the most divisive thing that was done of the two shows. A lot of hatred this morning when I was watching it live on Twitter, on the Facebook group, on many other things. I myself, Paul and I, and I'm sure a lot of other people being big Goto fans, we kind of wanted to see him go on with the title and do something, but Nakamura gets a surprising win. I guess it shouldn't be too surprising, but obviously I thought this was the best match they've had of the four of this year. They just kind of brought it all together. You had a much more interesting work with how long has it been since Goto's used the Shuriya Kekai?
Mm-hmm.
He almost pulled it off twice. I mean, so it's pretty cool to see. It's also counters the whole armbar thing with Nakamura from the G1. So I love the interplay there. The whole, like, them calling back to old matches and stuff like that, too. Does this say something about Goto not being a big draw? Is it more about them having a big plan for Nakamura? What do you think? Does this mean anything at all, the fact that Nakamura won the belt back? I mean, because to me, if you're like Goto, this puts him back at square one to me. I mean, what are you doing with him now?
He's always the odd man out, no matter what it is. He's always the odd man out. But I didn't think he was going to beat Nakamura for the fourth straight time. I really thought Nakamura was going to win.
I really was hoping they would let Goto do it. not because I have anything against Nakamura. I want to see him in the mix for that title, the heavyweight title. And I feel like he's done. I won't say he's done everything he can for the Intercontinental title. I mean, obviously, New Japan still feels like he has something he can do, but I just, there's a lot more interesting stories, I feel like, going the other way and letting him move on. But we get this. I think this is a fun little hint there. I really wouldn't mind seeing Nakamura and Ibushi again for the Intercontinental title at the Dome with the finish going the other way. And I think that's what New Japan wants to do. So I think that's why this happened here. And what you do with Goto now, I haven't a clue. I haven't a clue.
This is weird to me too, because imagine if let's say you do go with what Paul's saying, and then you have the Tanahashi Okada, do you really do the two same main events again in the consecutive Tokyo Dome shows? I mean, doesn't that say something about your product if you're doing the same thing twice in 2 years?
It's not completely unheard of for New Japan, to be honest. but I don't know if it says something or if it's just they have what works and they know what's going to pack the Dome. Because I think running the Dome every year is a big risk just because of how much it costs. It's not a cheap show.
Right, but I mean, if that's your WrestleMania, that's what the WWE runs, these huge ass stadiums every year. I mean, so, you know.
Yeah, but you know what? It's like, if you, let's just say you do those two matches again. Those two matches haven't been done since January 4th of this year.
Mm.
So it's not like they prostitute the match, you know what I mean? Like, for WWE, you see the same match 50 times a year, whereas here, those two matches in January were great, and everybody remembered them, and, you know, everybody kind of, as time goes on, it'll become bigger than it really was, so you can come back to it a year later if it hasn't been done for a whole year. Not the worst idea.
Well, we've got our pal Gary on the line. Nice of you to call right at the end there.
You know what? Save the best for last is what I always say. No, I kid. I just wanted to, you know, give you guys a call in and tell y'all how great of a job y'all are doing. This is a great show. I've gotten to hear a little bit of it. Not got to hear the whole thing. I actually kind of took a family vacation today, so I wasn't on the whole show. And I appreciate you, Sean and Paul, for letting me have the night, you know, and spend time with my family. I really appreciate that. And man, it is a pleasure to hear Tom on the show again. He is just so knowledgeable, and I'm glad you're here, Tom. Man, thanks for filling in for me.
Thanks, bud.
Man. So yeah, I mean, from what I've seen of these shows, they were great shows, and you know, you guys pretty much hit all the high points, and I'm right there with you, Sean. I just want to mention that the Goto thing, that boggles my mind. What's up with that? You guys don't seem to have an answer. I don't have an answer. I just wish we could get to the source.
I do remember, you know, America is a different deal, but I do remember, you know, Eric in that Facebook group and Damon and all those people that went to the ROH show saying that you've got Nakamura and Okada, they got lines going out the door, and like you could walk up to Goto and take a picture and sign on because no one's there getting autographs with the guy. I mean,
I can second that because I was there. Very true.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of the, like, you have to wonder if maybe just they don't see Goto as being that guy that you can trust to, because the IC title is pretty much like 1B when it comes to it's not like you've got the world title here, the IC title way down below, and then you got 1A and 1B because of, you know, what Nakamura's done with it, and then, you know, Goto continuing it and everything. So they count on that title to sell shows. And so, you know, if you're sitting there wanting to sell an event with – because look at what – has Goto really defended that belt against anybody else but Nakamura? No, you have to wonder about that. Like, why hadn't Goto wrestled anyone? Is it because they're worried about Goto not drawing a house? What do you think, Paul?
I mean, I think it's possible. It makes sense. I don't see how, if you, because I don't know if he's ever really been given that fair chance to have the ball and run with it and see what he can do. Granted, this was his second reign as the IWGP Intercontinental title with the championship, but I never feel like this title reign got a chance to get out of the blocks and let him try to carry a show like they did with Shinsuke, who obviously defended against everybody under the sun, and you know, he's had multiple reigns too, so I guess we'll just have to wait and see, because I'd really want Goto to get his fair shot.
I mean, Tom,
I think that's the problem, because every time he's that close, they just never pull a trigger on him. So now maybe they think that the fans think that he's not a top guy.
But the only way to do that is you have to give him that opportunity to show that he can be. I mean, in those opportunities where, okay, the fans think, okay, that's it, he's not winning, you have to let him win and go on. Like, you have to let him show he can, you know, like Paul was saying, like, you got to let him show he can have the opportunity to sell the house. He can,
or you just got to give him the opportunity to fail one way or the other, and then you'll know. Mm-hmm. But you won't know until you know.
I mean, what would it have hurt if you, I mean, look, I get it. Every event that you do, especially going forward now, is a big event because you're leading up to Wrestle Kingdom. You don't want to have a failed event, but like at some point, like, you gotta let them just go out there, and if it doesn't sell out or doesn't get the number that you want, okay, well, you know, all right, we gotta get the belt off the guy.
It's interesting as well because this guy hasn't, from what I know of it, maybe you guys can correct me on this, but he doesn't have a lot of injury problems either. You know, we've seen in American wrestling where, you know, let's talk WWE, for example, Dolph Ziggler gets the title, injured, gets a world title, injured, and then they have to take it away from him, and now he's stuck in kind of the IC title range somewhere in the mid-card. Nowhere close to the main event again. But Goto, I've not heard about him being injured or any other ailments to keep him away from, you know, basically taking that position.
You know what I would do? I would send him over to Noah and have him beat Minoru Suzuki and then try to draw there. And if he does good, bring him back. He's next proven he can be a draw.
All right, that's certainly an option that I think might be worth exploring at this point, because you could, I don't want to say he's damaged goods in New Japan, but if you have the crowd that set into thinking he is a second fiddle player, take a shot over at Noah, because I mean, Lord knows they could use. I mean, Jado, I'm sure, would appreciate some extra star power too, but
not to mention they really need to find a conquering hero to eventually get the Suzuki Gun thing out of there, because it's. At some point, you have to say that thing is not doing what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, yeah, there's a lot of possibilities here for Goto, and you know, we already kind of outlined what we think might happen with Nakamura. A lot of possibilities for him too. You know, so this is going to be interesting how they go going forward. I mean, certainly, at least you know, when we're looking at that card on Monday, October 12th. I mean, that card's already pretty stacked. I mean, you've got Red Dragon and Roppongi Vice. You've got Okada and AJ as your main event. You've got Nakamura and Carl Anderson, who came out at the end and got his challenge because he beat both Goto and Nakamura in the G1. You've got Ishii and Makabe again. I know I'm forgetting something here. There's another match, or the Naito and then. Tanahashi, so that card looks like it's going to be one of the best of the year. I mean, it could definitely rival Dominion, for sure. Going into that show, like, what are you most excited about, Tom?
Oh, Okada Styles, easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best match you can possibly match. It's the best in-ring match I think you can possibly put together right now between anybody, anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, hot off the tails of their incredible match at Dominion, I've been salivating for another match, and the if it ain't broke, don't fix it line is New Japan's motto right now. This is the match that you could put at the forefront and say, yeah, man, you're totally right.
I mean, Gary, you know, even though we pretty, you know, this is one of those where it seems like the result is in doubt, they definitely always make it to where they give you that sliver of hope the other guy can win. Or is that the match you're most excited about? I know you got your boy Naito, who could possibly win that G1 briefcase, Gary. Let's not put that out of the.
Yeah, and that would be the most exciting moment for me if he was to win. I'm not sold it's going to happen though, so I wouldn't say it. But I mean, this main event, like these two guys are saying, it's just salivating. It's exciting, and you know, that's what I think everybody's pointing to say this is going to be one of the best matches of the entire night. But yeah, man, if Naito was to win that briefcase, it would trump that for me.
I know you're waiting with bated breath for that.
Oh, I am, and I'm patiently waiting.
All right, so if you got to put a rating on these shows. What are you saying for Okayama, and what are you saying for Kobe, Tom? Out of 10.
How you rated on a 1 out of 10? Or?
Yeah, 1 out of 10. What do you think?
I thought overall the Wednesday show I kind of enjoyed more. I don't know why, but I did. I'd give that like a 7 out of 10, maybe. Maybe a 7 out of 10.
What about this morning's show?
I don't know. I thought they got to go 7 out of 10, but I still like Wednesday's show better for some reason. Today's show are great, especially the main event, but...
Yeah, Wednesday's show, I think, surprised me, but I still think I enjoyed this morning's show more. I'll give Okayama 7.5. That main event is something you should go watch just to see, you know, Ibushi and Makabe pretty much murder each other for about 20 minutes. Kobe, I'm going to give an 8. Despite some of the wonky finishes, the junior tag match delivered. Fale and Tanahashi was awesome. The main event, Nakamura and Goto just killed it. As Sean said, it was their best match out of all the series of ones that they've had this year. It's a great night for wrestling great morning for wrestling for us. Great night for Japan, but just stellar show.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing to say, all the title matches on both shows delivered. So, you know, the matches that you're counting on to bring the house, they all brought something to the table. So a lot of them brought things we weren't expecting, whether it's finishes, whether it's just how the match went, you know, certain, depending on who's in there. So I'm going to say a 7 for the Okayama show. I think there was a little bit more on the filler side on that show, but definitely you had two main events that were pretty awesome. Omega and Kushida was, again, great, and so was Makabe and Ibushi, and, you know, Tiger Mask brought it in that match with Steve Anthony, and then the tag title match. I mean, Tenkozy, those guys gave it everything they had against Gallus and Anderson. They didn't win, but, man, they made you want to root for them, and that's what you want in those matches. And then you get this morning show, you know, you had some better tags across the board. You know, the Seidel with Omega preview there, that was really good. The AJ and Okada stuff, really good there. Then you get all the main events that were, you know, fantastic in their own right. So, I mean, you know, Red Dragon and then Time Splitters as well. So, just freaking another killer card there for the Kobe show. So, I would say almost an 8.5, really, for that Kobe show. So, I mean, Gary, do you have any thoughts on ratings, or you want to abstain?
Yeah, I mean, hey, just quickly, I mean, I watched a lot of the you know, different main events. I really didn't get a chance to you know, fully watch the Wednesday show all the way through. I kind of skimmed through some of the matches, so it's kind of almost unfair for me to rate them. But from what I saw, from kind of the content, what I know about New Japan from my history, I think you guys kind of have it on point. I think, to me, if I was, you know, going to think it through straight, 7 would probably be my choice for the Wednesday show. The main event was just too awesome. I mean, I really want to put it to a 7.5, but, you know, without fully knowing the show, I'm just going to go 7, and I think Paul had to write 8 because you had so many great different matches in that show this morning. So, to me, that's probably where I would stand.
All right, so last thing we're going to do for this deal is the way we've been wrapping up these reviews lately. What was your favorite moment, least favorite moment, the best match, and your MVP of the show, Tom?
I think the best match was, I'm going to go with Goto and Nakamura for me personally. MVP? Oh, boy. You can go several different ways. I'm still going to go with Naito. Could just set up to got us thinking now, you know, like what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And my favorite moment. Weird one, but I still like when Naito smacked Shibata upside the head and Shibata just didn't even look at him, just said to himself, you know, I'm going to kick your ass in 4 days. Something different.
Yeah. man, best match. Tom nailed it. It is Goto Nakamura. They totally knocked it out of the ballpark. My favorite moment of the weekend, despite the fact that, Nakamura wins the title and it's sort of a surprise, the pop that that guy gets when he gets a three count is enormous. And it's always really cool to watch the Japanese audience react that way because they're usually so, they're quieter. They're still loud at times, but they're usually quieter. And to watch them really get behind somebody and when they get the big win and they explode, it's just something really, really cool to see. Least favorite, there's not a match on this show that's below 2 stars. I don't know if there is a moment I hated.
I would agree with you. I don't know that I asked that because that's, the four questions that we get in this, but I mean, with New Japan, sometimes that's what you get. Like you don't have a least favorite because everything was good at least. Nakamura Goto, I think definitely best match of the two shows, hands down. I thought, I'm going to say Seidel had a terrific showing for himself on the two tags that he was in. I'm going to say MVP to him. And then, he also had the interactions there at the end of the junior title match there with Omega to kind of announce the match they're having. That was a match I forgot to mention. You got Omega and Seidel for the junior title there at King of Pro Wrestling too. So, favorite moment, man, a lot of them. I'm going to say the, I'm gonna just rest on that one. I can't think right now. So, Gary, ask you these questions.
Okay.
What do you think?
Okay, so this is very easy for me. I totally agree with all of you. The panel is correct. Nakamura Goto, definitely the best match. How can you go wrong with that? Really. That's the easiest one here. The next answer for me is the best moment Naito walks down the ramp. Least favorite moment Naito walks up the ramp. And
walks MVP up the ramp, getting beat up by Shibata.
Yeah, but gets basically leaving after that. That's what I'm saying. The whole beat down, whatever. It's just, anytime Naito leaves, it's always the down moment for New Japan. They're trying to figure out how to get past that. and then, of course, the MVP has to go to Naito. So I think Tom's correct. He stole that from me, I think. I think he's reading my notes.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to – the whole Shibata Naito stuff was great.
Yeah.
I love that. Like I said, we don't really ever see, just somebody get beat up and then just brawl into the back. Then, even though it was, a very short moment, because Shibata basically grabbed his head and then they were already out of the curtain. So, but it's still cool. I'd love to see, a backstage brawl between those two or something.
Yeah, they don't really do – I mean, from my experience, and you guys correct me, I've never really seen backstage brawls in New Japan. Do they happen?
No, because remember, it's treated as a real sport.
Oh, okay. So, sorry. Know, yeah. I was curious.
That's another thing.
Yeah, that's what me and my friend were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've just never seen that. We're like, well, maybe during intermission, they should just put the camera back there and see the guy brawling outside by the lake or something,
Do an Al Snow hardcore.
WWE Lego pops up in the bottom corner.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We know that, Ghetto's a fan of that sometimes, so. I mean, that's another thing, too, that we forget sometimes with the booking is the show is booked like a sport. And I thought that was brought up well, too, that, it's not like all of a sudden, as much as, we hate them, the Patriots don't just all of a sudden suck randomly. So it's not like, these guys are all of a sudden going to lose their places because they're still great.
Uh-huh.
And until they prove they're no longer great, that's when you move them away, or you try to capitalize on diminishing returns before it gets to the point where they can't go anymore. So
exactly.
That's what's interesting about the way New Japan or, you know, Japanese wrestling or whatever is different to what we see here in America, because that's the thing, you know, we're seeing New Japan all the time. We can watch almost any show that New Japan puts out now, whereas, you know, back when Tom was watching, or even when, you know, Paul started watching, it was a pain in the ass to watch anything. You know, you had to go tape trading, or you had to go scour the internet to hope it was around or something, and now they just made it really easy for everybody to have a voice. Sometimes we forget about that we are not the audience here in the West.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, that about does it here for our review of New Japan Destruction in Kobe and Okayama for the 2015 version. We will be back talking about New Japan. We'll be doing the preview on not this week, but next week. And then we'll be doing the review on Tuesday night. A day after the show's aired. We do our football show on Monday nights after Monday Night Football, so it's kind of almost impossible for us to do it that night. You know, it'll air that morning, so we have to do it on Tuesday. But, you know, Tom, if you're not busy, man, you are very most welcome to join us for that Tuesday night.
Let me know. I'll be here.
All right, man. And if you know anybody else in your crew, I know you got a little crew there that watches the New Japan stuff with you, that would want to be on, they're more than welcome as well. So,
all right.
Well, just want to say thank you again, Tom, for being on with us. You teach us so much, and we learn so much every time you're on, and it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Hopefully the Cowboys have a much better week next week.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody call Matt Castle.
I still say it's not all.
Brandon Whedon wasn't the fault today.
It's that defense.
No, it's the defense, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't the defense. The defense was just wore out.
Well, yeah, but they have no
Garrett
players.
Did nothing to change that team in the second half. That's on him.
Yes.
No. It was a tale of two halves, really, man. It was just a tale of two halves. I just freaking hit the wall there.
Off.
Yeah.
I'll never see him again.
Dude, that guy is insane right now. Like, just, he is their entire offense. And he, I mean, well, him in the running game, but, like, it's just insane how
I mean,
he is.
He's the running game also, because you can't stack a line if he... If he's going downfield, you can't stack a line against the run. Mm-hmm. So he opens up the whole thing.
Yeah.
All right, so if I never see him again, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I'll say this. If Julio's hamstring pops, trust me, you won't see him again, at least in the Cowboys schedule.
Hi, Gary. Wishing.
No, I have him on the team. He's one of my fantasy players, man. I'm very happy with his performance. It's just not my real-life family. You know, my real-life team, they suffer. So.
Right. You know, your Broncos did get the victory here. So I'm sure you're elated. Paul, I'm rather upset that freaking Amir Abdullah actually did something in this game after I sat there and debated for like a while to sit there where I was going to start him or not. And I wind up not doing it, and of course he screws me over.
Of course.
The life of a fantasy player.
Hey, I set Ryan Matthews of the Eagles today, and I'm paying for that too. So.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, damn it. So. I did that too. So, but you know, Demaryius Thomas got a touchdown, so it all works out. But this is the wrong show to be talking about football.
Yeah, that's tomorrow night after the Monday Night Football game.
Yeah, so yes, if you are a big football fan and you listen to this show and you like hearing Gary and I talk about things, you know, sadly, Paul, you know, he's very football knowledgeable, but, you know, he has other things to do on a Monday. But, I mean, it'd be cool if he called one time, you know, to talk football with us. But maybe one day, Paul.
Maybe. I was about to say, Monday's my bowling night, guys, so.
Oh. Well, hey, I mean, our friend that does the show with us, Randy, he's in a bowling league. He's like a bowling champion, that dude. He's like a one step away from pro bowler. So, you know, interesting that we have our two different hosts do the bowling thing. That's
cool.
That's cool. But anyway, I'm sure you don't care anything about bowling. If you're hearing about, I mean, unless bowling is now a big sport in Japan that I didn't know about. But either way, thank you to everybody, and we shall see you again on Friday morning. Until then.
Yep. If you're
Gary,
not living,
how's it going? How's the line?
Hey, we just gotta remember everybody. You gotta remember this one line. If you're not living life to the max,
not living life at all.
You know it.
Please. Hey,
we'll be right back.